Every soldier in every battle of every war gambles with his life. But suppose that gamble were a sure thing. Suppose that you were a soldier and you knew that death could not touch you. What would you do?
Stand by for adventure.
Let us stand in the corner of Dr. Juan Avillo's living room as he ushers in his three friends for another evening of storytelling around the crackling fire. Here comes Major Gordon, his military bearing proof of many years of army life. Behind him, walking toward the fire with the rolling gait of a sailor, follows Captain Quigley, merchant skipper. Then Richard Moore, journalist adventurer, saunters in as their host, Dr. Juan Avillo, South American scientist and philosopher, closes the living room door. He says,
"It is good to see you all gathered here together, my friend. My constant fear is that for some reason or other, one of us will not be able to come."
"Oh, that's a rather morbid welcome, Doctor."
"Oh, I don't mean to be morbid, Moore, but life is so full of uncertainty."
"Yeah, and if it ain't. I remarked that the minute I was born."
"Oh, that's precocious, Quigley."
"Precocious? No, Major. Slippery.
Oh?
Doctor almost got me."
"Well, I think when it comes right down to it, it's the uncertainties that make life interesting."
"I agree with you, Dick. Even in everyday occurrences, the funny is in wondering how they'll turn out."
"Like whether you're going to nick yourself when you're shaving."
"That's right. Or whether there's any mail in the box."
"Or whether you'll cross the street safe."
"I can see, my friends, that you are truly adventurous. But being a philosopher, I still yearn for certainty."
"No, Avillo, no. You wouldn't if you had ever had any experience with it."
"Have you, Major?"
"Oh, indeed, I have."
"Well, I bet it made life dull."
"No, it made life horrible."
"You mean that once you actually knew what was going to happen?"
"Well, Doctor, I'll let you judge that when you've heard my story. And when I've finished, you may tell me whether you really ever want to experience certainty."
"To this story, my dear Gordon, I will listen very intently."
"Well, some years ago, when I was leading a regiment in the constant wars that raged in the northern provinces of India, my aide was Captain Chisholm, a Britisher who'd been partly educated in India. Chisholm was sort of an odd chap to be found in the British Army. He loved India, spoke many Indian dialects, and had read extensively in Hindu philosophy. The other officers and I used to tease him, sometimes unmercifully, because of his strange beliefs. Chisholm, I said, suppose that you knew before going into battle that you definitely were not going to die. Would it increase your daring?" "I don't know," he replied. "I've never thought of that." "Well, the philosophy that you study tells you how to predict the future. Why don't you use it to military advantage?" "Well, I'm afraid that rather annoyed him. So I continued. We're going on an active campaign duty tomorrow. Some of us will surely die. With what you've learned, you ought to be able to make up the casualty list right now." His face reddened. "Perhaps I shall, Major Gordon," he answered. "The devil must have been in me that day, for I persisted. Oh, come, Captain. Oh, perhaps do it now. It'll save time when we're in the field. Here's a piece of paper. Write." Chisholm evidently did not know that I was teasing him, because though his lips were trembling and his hands shaking, he acted as if I'd just given him an order. "Very good, sir," he snapped. So I watched him write the list.
"Did you see which of your men were on it?"
"No, I didn't."
"Well, darned if I'd have looked at it, even if he'd have showed it."
"But I did notice that there were a total of six names on the list before I told him that he should judge for himself how good he was at the business of prophecy. He took the paper to his quarters. I was foolish enough to tell the story to some of the other officers, so that when we went out the next day into the hill country, there was some jovial speculation as to how right Chisholm would be. Chisholm became more and more sullen. Suddenly, there was a sharp crack of a rifle. We all dismounted and took to cover. That is, all but Chisholm. "Chisholm! Chisholm," I cried. "Down, down, take cover!" He paid no attention, but walked on into the fire. "Oh, we've driven the poor fellow mad, stark, raving mad. Partington, one of the other officers, committed. He's committing suicide." "Well, there's only one way to save him, Partington," I said. "Shoot him in the leg and bring him to earth." Lieutenant Partington carefully aimed his rifle at Chisholm's leg. He fired. A puff of dust kicked up fully 5 yards away from the man. "Is that the best you can do, Partington?" I demanded caustically. "I'm sorry, sir," he replied. "My hands must have trembled. Well, then give me that rifle," I said. So I fired a shot.
"Did you hit him, Gordon?"
"It was no better than Partington."
"I thought you were a crack shot, Major."
"Well, I tried another, but missed. I kept my thoughts to myself. It's no use, Partington. He's out of range now." Chisholm was still going towards the enemy. The whole regiment watched him as if bewitched. The enemy must have been struck with fear, because as he reached the machine gun nest, the guns, one after another, jammed. And then, with maddening leisure, he took aim and shot the tribesmen, one by one. The enemy broke and ran. I gave the order for a charge. My men jumped from cover. When the enemy saw the whole regiment coming, they suddenly turned and stood their ground. On all sides, you could hear the crack of rifles and the chatter of machine guns. Far ahead of us, Chisholm still walked on, killing as he went. The tribesmen again broke their ranks and fled. and we were no longer able to maintain contact with them. Chisholm then returned to the regiment. The men crowded about him, congratulating him, but he stood among them, unsmiling, a sad, otherworld expression in his pale, gray eyes. The casualty list was posted. McGinnis, Thorpe, Farrelly, Redding, Gladstone, Wakefield, all had died in the skirmish. I shall remember those names for the rest of my life. Those six names. Well, as time went by, he became hardly civil to anyone who spoke to him. Sometimes, however, before battle, he spoke in a softer tone to some of the men. The regiment, both officers and men, began to notice that these words of kindness were spoken only to those who made up the casualty list of the next day. There was a morbid and horrible fascination in watching Chisholm's behavior before he went into action. If the men even saw a glimmer of a sad smile on his thin, drawn lips, they were struck with terror. Many a man imagined a smile that was not there and ran to me begging to be allowed not to fight just that day. Well, I couldn't countenance such requests or my regiment would fall completely apart. On one occasion alone did I give in to the fears which were driving my men into panic. I was looking over some maps in my tent when a sergeant, Alec Brandon, passed Chisholm. Brandon saluted the captain and then quickly averted his eye to avoid seeing the answer. But I saw it. Chisholm saluted Brandon as one might greet a general and a hero. Then when Brandon had passed, Chisholm shook his head sadly and sighed. A shiver went down my spine. But just before we went out to fight, I issued an order that Sergeant Brandon be assigned to guard duty at the camp. However, when we returned, we found that it had been attacked by a raiding party, and among the dead was Alec Brandon. Gentlemen, to say that I was shaken by this occurrence is sheer understatement.
I don't blame you, Major. You must have felt that you were gambling against loaded dice.
How small are the powers of man in the face of destiny.
To cap the whole distressing day, Colonel Manley, my superior, paid a surprise visit to our encampment. He asked why Captain Chisholm had not been cited for bravery. I was in an awkward situation. Colonel Manley, to cite Chisholm for bravery would be to risk the disaffection of the entire regiment. Why? The colonel asked sharply. Well, there is a story abroad among the men, I replied, that Chisholm performs these foolhardy acts only because he knows that he cannot possibly be killed. Since he runs no risks, he may be energetic, but hardly brave. Major Gordon, if you are going to command your regiment according to the superstitions of the men, I will relieve you of your command. Then Manley suggested that I think it over and speak to him further in the morning. However, the next morning, scouts brought news of the approaching column of tribesmen. I led my men out to battle. We met the foe, not many miles from camp. As usual, Chisholm did not take cover when prudence demanded that he should. The crucial part of the day's fighting was for a bridge. The bridge itself was in an open vale. With riflemen lurking in the hillocks on both sides, it would be difficult for either of the opposing forces to control the bridge without holding the hill beyond. But Chisholm sought it out in the same way he had a score of times before, armed only with a rifle. The fame of this sad Englishman with a charmed life must have spread, because as soon as he walked out into the open, most of the firing ceased, and there was every evidence that a retreat had begun. But one of the enemy, almost as a last gesture of despair, ran up to the top of the overlooking hill. It was too late. For even as he did, the fearless Chisholm fell. Dead. We followed up the retreat which Chisholm had started, and won the day. On the morrow, after he had been laying to rest, it was my duty to check over his personal effects. I found his daily predictions on casualties, each neatly tabulated on paper, beginning with the one I had forced him to write. And on the last one, in regular alphabetical order, was the name Chisholm. Gentlemen, I ask you to join with me in a salute to Captain Chisholm, the bravest soldier I have ever known.
Yes? I see what you mean, Gordon, about certainty being crazy horrible.
In this case, Doctor,
well, you are. I think if I had Chisholm's power, I'd shoot myself.
Well, I know, but couldn't be no use. Of course, from what I understand, you'd have missed.
Unless you were supposed to be killed. Certainly.
There is but one certainty, as I see it.
Oh? What is that, Major?
That our fate lies with higher powers. We may question, we may even find out what it will be. But we never can avert it.